My name is Ramika, and I'm sharing everything I know about how to love in a healthier way and how to matter in a more meaningful way. Welcome to Kinfolk. So we all developed coping mechanisms at a really young age. This happens with or without trauma. It's just that with trauma, you're developing coping mechanisms and way to process information that constantly protects you and keeps you safe. And so what happened when we were younger is that we had all of these situations that we got thrown in. And so some of the coping mechanisms were developed because we were anticipating something that would happen or a shoe that was going to drop. And then we were putting together an if-then statement. If this happens, then this is how I'm going to respond. And we do it enough that it almost becomes automatic. And so even when we outlive our trauma and, you know, we're now trying to create a life with different people, those people aren't necessarily trying to harm us. If we haven't deliberately chosen a different way to respond, then we're automatically going to default to whatever we've prepared for. And this was a hard truth for me because I didn't realize that I was just implementing all of these coping mechanisms all of the time. Like somebody would say something and I'm already sliding into my coping mechanism. You know, this is how I'm going to respond. This is what I'm going to do. And when it's a trauma-led response, a lot of times your response is going to be defensive or offensive. Those are the two options, right? Because you either have to defend yourself if you're living through trauma, or you're going to have to come to some kind of offense. And that's a really hard place to stay in, right? Like there's just not a lot of freedom there. It really feels painful. And sometimes our reactions, we don't mean them, but they just come out because that's kind of where the trauma has placed us, right? It's hard to imagine yourself when you're in a living room if you're constantly feeling like you're operating on a battlefield. And so my goal is to constantly remind us we're in the living room, right? Like you're not at war. You don't have to fight. And if you don't have to fight, then we can take more preventative measures as opposed to reacting to everything as it comes. And that's really where the shift has happened in my life. I realized that a lot of the ways that I was showing up, I was reacting to things as they came because I never really anticipated that things would be good. It was always the worst case scenario. And so that's what I had been preparing myself for. And I'm assuming that's similar to you if you find yourself constantly reacting in a way that you really feel like doesn't represent the person that you want to be. It represents the person that you used to need to be in order to make it through your trauma. And so that's really the shift here is going from responding reactively to trying to come up with coping mechanisms that are going to help us take a preventative position so that we can just play the game and anticipate how we want to respond before it even happens and give our brains the space to just slide into a healthy coping mechanism so that we're showing up all the time in the ways that we want to and not the ways that we used to. The reason behind why they say that it takes about 4 weeks to create a new habit, it's because our brain is creating pathways. And in order for those pathways to cement, it takes our brain about 4 weeks of practice. So you have to do the same thing in the same way every single time. And over the course of 4 weeks, your brain will create that cemented pathway and it'll just do it instantly. Like it's a quick response. And so that's why when we were responding to trauma, because we were responding to trauma all of the time, we had a response that was very quick. Our brain was able to create pathways. We were given plenty of opportunities with our trauma in order to respond in the same way to practice. And so our brain just slides in and it takes over the work or the heavy lifting of creating a cemented pathway so that we can just respond efficiently. And so it's not impossible to do something different or create a different way to respond, but it does take a lot of intention and a lot of practice doing the same thing and rehearsing it over and over so that it clicks with your brain, the actions that you also want to be taking. Now, I know I made that sound really simple, but the reality is if you've been responding or reacting in a similar way, and you've been sliding into a coping mechanism over, let's say, over 20 years, then for 20 years, not only have you been creating that one pathway that leads you to that same reaction, but your brain has reinforced and simplified other pathways in other scenarios to help you respond efficiently, but that's why you tend to have a similar reaction. And so when they say you can't teach an old dog new tricks, I don't think that it's the trick. Like, it's not relearning something that is the difficult part. You can always learn something new, but the humility and the patience it takes and the grace with yourself to unlearn all of the other pathways that you didn't even recognize or realize that you were also creating over the course of over 20 years. So I want to present three different preventative coping mechanisms with the understanding that just because you apply these, it doesn't mean that everything is going to change. I think a lot is able to change when we start making preventative decisions in our life as opposed to responding in a reactive way. And I'll say this, like, I get asked probably the most often if I'm an angry person or, you know, if I get angry. And I think that's the most funny question to me because I feel so deeply, so deeply. And so if you ask me in this moment to like think of everything that I know about that's going on globally, I would tell you that there are so many areas where I feel angry if I just sit in it. But the reason that I think people actually ask me that question is not because they're curious if I get angry, because I think everybody assumes that everybody experiences all forms and expresses all spectrum of emotion, but people really want to know how I express myself when I do get angry. And to that, I would say that, you know, there are times when I find myself acting reactively, but the older I've gotten, the less reactive I've gotten because I've chosen to take more preventative measures. And so I realized for myself, and this is where the shift happened, is that I would have these really intense, like extreme reactions a lot of times, like either to feeling unsafe about something or feeling untrusting about something or, you know, like fill in the blank, whatever the, if you want to call it negative emotion is. And I automatically would like default into a response because that's what I had prepared for my whole life. Like being in that, feeling that emotion automatically triggers my coping mechanism. And now I'm reacting to whatever the stimulus was. And the moment it clicked for me was that I need to become so consciously aware of every single move I make, not in a anxious way or, you know, like an overbearing way or in a controlling way, but just like I had realized that so much of my life I was just defaulting into. And if I really wanted to have an opinion about how I was living my life, then I really needed to become consciously aware of what I was doing and why I was doing it, and then anticipating how I wanted to respond so that I could just start practicing, even though it would feel uncomfortable for a while. And so there's a lot of parts of my life that when I tried it on and I started acting differently, it felt really uncomfortable at first because it wasn't me. Like I had gotten used to how I would respond when I felt X, Y, and Z emotion. And the moment it clicked that like, it doesn't matter that I feel uncomfortable, like of course I'm gonna feel uncomfortable because I've never done this before. But if I do it enough, what I know is that eventually it'll just become who I am and I'm going to start living a different life. And so that's what I want to just present to you is that I'm going to share three preventative coping mechanisms. You can choose, obviously, whether or not you want to adopt them and take them on in your life with the understanding that it's going to feel uncomfortable at first because it's not how you've chosen to deliberately respond when you felt X, Y, and Z. But if you do it enough, I promise you, your brain will kick in and then you become a different person just with practice. So the first preventative coping mechanism that I have adopted into my life is to name everything that feels vague. I find that more often than not, when you feel anxious or you feel overstimulated, it's because you feel like there's a lot of things coming at you, like 10,000 miles per hour, 10,000 different things. And that's genuinely how it feels for me too. Like I feel like I am balancing 30 different plates all at once. And I mean, there are different plates that I'm balancing, but when I really break it down, I'm working a 9-to-5. I launched a podcast that has an episode that launches every week. I have a dog and we go on walks every day and I'm responsible for him. I'm a part of a church group and, you know, I have a platform on Instagram and TikTok called Within Warm Walls. And so I've just named 5 different things that I actually have to do. And so when I am able to name it, it feels less vague and I feel more like I understand my next step. And that's really the goal, for it to start to make sense to yourself what your next step is to take. Like, that's why it feels overstimulating and overwhelming, is because you're not able to name yet what your next step needs to be to move forward. And so whenever I'm feeling overstimulated or I feel like I have a lot on my plate, I'll just name the things that I need to get done. And how it's looked like for me is to physically create a to-do list where I can get things off of my mind and onto paper. And that helps me prioritize as well. But sometimes I'm just talking to myself, right? Like, it's not like I'm running somewhere to go get my phone or a piece of paper to write things down. Like, I'm just saying out loud, like, this is what I need to do. I find that when you name the first 2 things that you need to get done in this specific moment, then the next 10 things start coming to you, right? Like, it's just a momentum that you're building off of. And so if you can name the first 2 things, you can typically name the next 10 things. And now you have 12 things, 12 different steps to take in order to move forward. The next preventative coping mechanism I have adopted is to force a pause. And this has honestly probably been the number one thing that changed everything for me. And it has like bled into every single part of my life. So you'll even notice as I talk with a pause, I act with a pause. Like, it's, I'm one of the people in my friend group that my like pace of life is just a little slower. You know, every day I feel like I get a lot done. But I think overall, like, you look at my life in a year and or over the course of 5 years, and I've hit milestones at different points a lot later than a lot of my friend group has. And I think a lot of it is attributed to this coping mechanism that I've chosen to adopt, forcing a pause in my life. And it happens when I'm responding to people or responding to requests that I'm given or asked of me. But it also just is how I choose to live my life in general. And it's not how I naturally want to show up. Like, if you put a plate of food in front of me, I want to just inhale it. I used to all the time. If you tell me to get something done at work, I want to get it done in the next 5 minutes. Like, I am not a pausey kind of person. So it is something that is very intentional. And there's other pathways that as I continue to live, I'm like, oh yeah, like that's another area where I can force myself to pause. What it literally looks like in conversations with people is to take like 10 seconds before you say anything. And this is even when you're given a request. And honestly, I think it's going to be the most awkward for them than it will be for you, because you have work to do in that pause. But for them, they're just experiencing silence. And so it is a very awkward interaction at first, but when you start to pause other areas of your life, it's just who you are. It becomes who you are. And I feel like it feels less awkward. I don't know. You can ask the people that are around me. But when somebody comes to you and they ask you something, like, force yourself to wait 10 seconds before you respond. This shifts everything. What I'm doing in those 10 seconds is I am doing the work to name what is vague, right? Like, what are the next two things that I need to get done in this moment? And then the next 10 things come. So now I have 12 things on my mind that need to get done. In that 10 seconds, I am also reprioritizing. Hey, in order to say yes to this person, do all 12 things need to get done today? And my instinct is to say, yes, I want to get it off my plate. But in reality, there are some things that I'm like, oh yeah, like that can move to next week and this can move to next month. And, you know, like I can shift things to reprioritize and say yes to that person if I need to. But we'll get to this later when I talk about some of my codependent relationships. I've had two really big ones in my life, but I have found that even if somebody that I care about is asking a request of me, like let's say it's going to take a lot of effort on my part, my temptation is just to say yes. And I think that's just all of our temptation in relationships that we really care about, right? Like our first response, we want it to be a yes. And it also feels like when we don't choose to take a pause that we have to give someone a response in that moment. They want a yes or no, and so I need to give them a yes if I can and a no only if it's really impossible. But the more I force a pause, the more I actually request a longer pause in my relationships. Because I found that this has helped me shift from more codependent relationships to a healthy dependence in relationships is that there's an aspect of it that a lot of times we just go to people to meet needs for us and we actually can work it through ourselves, right? Like there's some kind of character something that I'm trying to avoid. And so I go to the friend that I know is able to do it either better than me or faster than me. And I just ask them if they can do it. And because they love me, they'll probably say yes, right? Like that's a typical, that's understandable. What I flipped on its head was that like maybe there are some parts that like, yes, it might be difficult. Yes, it might take longer for me to do it as opposed to that friend. But does that mean that I shouldn't do it, that I shouldn't develop the skill? You know, like you miss out on opportunities when you don't practice and develop your own skills in those same areas. And so what that means in relationships is if I've taken that 10 seconds, I realize I can reprioritize. I still request more time 50% of the time. And so it'll just look like, hey, I heard what your ask was. You want me to do X, Y, and Z. I'll name it for them. Let me get back to you either tomorrow or next week. Or for myself, right? Like I've taken more time and I've actually considered like the responsibility that would be attached to that person's ask. And after 24 hours and I've slept on it, I realized that that's actually not something that I can commit to. I realize that that's not actually something that I can commit to. Or by next week, you know, once things have settled, I realize that some of the things, the 12 things on my plate, they actually are requiring more than I initially accounted for, more time, more energy, more effort. And so by the time it gets to next week, I thought it would settle. Some things would drop off of my plate, but they actually haven't. And so what forcing yourself to pause does is it changes the pace that you're allowing things to come at you. So you feel like 10,000 things are coming to you all at one time, forcing a pause, like literally forcing yourself to stop from reacting and give yourself time to think or give yourself a day or a week to respond to a request, allows yourself to change the pace of your life. and change the pace that things are coming at you. Because the reality is especially when we're feeling overstimulated, we feel like everything is coming at us all at once. We have to respond in this moment. Actually, we're late, you know, and everything is coming from different kinds of angles. And what forcing a pause does is it changes the pace that you're allowing those things to come at you and where you're allowing those things to come at you from. And so you're able to be more calculated in your response. You're able to be preventative instead of reactive. The thing is when we enter that space where we're overstimulated, that is the place where we're going to respond the most offensively. And I mean that in the sense that we have something to offend, right? Like things are coming at us, we have to defend ourselves. But the harsh reality is a lot of times when we offend, the people that it's going to impact the most are the people that we engage with that are the closest to us, right? Like they just have the most access to us. And so the people that we tend to respond to or react to in a more offensive way more often are going to be the people we care about the most, not the least. The last preventative coping mechanism that I have adopted is communicating what helps versus what hurts. And this is something that is really hard to do. A coping mechanism is literally designed to keep you in the dark about what's going on, right? Like your brain wants to respond in an efficient way. It doesn't want to have to think about what it's going to do. And so actually, that's the first indicator to knowing that you have developed a habit is that you no longer think about it. Like if you were to ask me right now, I could tell you that because I don't have dishes in my sink, that at some point I unloaded my dishwasher. And because I know that when I implemented that routine is in the morning, that it must have happened, but I don't remember it. Like I kind of remember like putting some things away, but I wasn't keyed in, you know? And it's the same thing. Like when we are driving somewhere, I'll tell myself that I want to go to the grocery store and I'll end up at the grocery store, but I couldn't have told you what turns I made and what color lights were. Like I'm just assuming that I did the right thing. And so that's how you know that you have a good coping mechanism, because it's designed to keep you in the dark. You're not supposed to consciously think about doing it. But while you're trying to create preventative ways, you have to become so consciously aware of what kind of mechanism you're defaulting into so that you can have a say in how you want to respond going forward. So with communicating what hurts and what helps, it's an ask to become more consciously aware of how you feel about what's happening. And my last episode goes really into depth in this. So go take a listen if you haven't listened to that episode and come back to this one. But become very consciously aware of how you feel about what you're doing and how you feel about what others are doing to you or around you. That's critical. Now, the reason why this is important with developing a coping mechanism is this distinction between harm and hurt. When we were going through trauma, the reason why it was traumatic is because in some way we were harmed. And the difference between the two is intent. So we use this all the time in my family. It just helps like make it very clear about what was happening. Like, did you intend to do that? Because that hurt me. And what you'll find with the people who really love you, this is different than you may have experienced before, right? You might be in a group of or a relationship of people where you truly believe that they love you. And I hope that that's the case. When that is the case, people's intent to hurt you is no longer there. Now, this is key with becoming someone who reacts less than they respond, because what we're really trying to do is start implementing preventative coping mechanisms that help you bridge that gap. And communication is the first thing to drop off. I know for me, where my reaction comes from stems from a belief that the people who hurt me were intending to do so. And it's not something that I'm consciously aware of when I'm just sliding right into a coping mechanism, which, by the way, my favorite, my like creme de la creme coping mechanism that's linked to my communication style is the silent treatment. I love a good old fashioned silent treatment. I won't go off on anyone. I won't try to break anyone down. I'm not going to throw any punches, but you better believe that if I am going to do something harsh in a reaction way, I am going to give you the silent treatment. And so when I became consciously aware of this dynamic, right, like I slide into a silent treatment coping mechanism when I feel harmed, then the first step for me is to make the connection and just like level the playing field, right? Like in relationships, we're gonna hurt one another, right? Like that just comes with the territory. So you almost have to establish that first. Like you're going to hurt one another in a relationship. And this is key, especially if you were harmed, there was a lot of intent with the trauma that you're now outliving, because what was true in that situation is that the harm probably looked very similar to the hurt in this new relationship. But the difference is that this new relationship isn't intending to hurt you. And so just level the playing field that it's going to appear the same on the surface. The hurt will appear the same, but the intent is going to be different. And if you automatically slide into your coping mechanism because you believe that there's always intent, always connected to the hurt, then you will stay on the battlefield and you'll never feel like you're in the comfort of your own home. You'll never feel like you've made it to the living room. And that's really where the shift had to happen for me to start. Then the second piece is communicating what hurt then. You know, like if it's not about intent, if I'm in a loving relationship and this person never intends or didn't intend in this situation to hurt me, then now it's on me to communicate what hurt. And that's huge for me, especially because I want to just go silent. Like everything in me just wants to shut down. I want to be in the car with this other person and I want to turn towards the window and turn the music up. Like I want to be the most immature you've ever seen, especially on Within Warm Walls. You guys haven't seen it, but that's my temptation. And so now that I'm consciously aware of that, it takes everything in me to make a deliberate decision to do something different. And that is simply communicating what hurt. It could be a line as simple as, "This is what happened. This hurt me. Was that your intent? If you need to hear it out loud to dissociate from the intent piece, or, you know, this hurt, period." And then see how the other person responds to it. I think the second piece is communicating what helps. And this is something that's done throughout your entire relationship. Like, I don't know why, because it's so simple. It took me so long. I realized that when things are going well, I don't always speak to it. And I don't know how much of that is attributed to, like, I don't know how long it's going to be good. But once you outlive your trauma, look forward to knowing that there are going to be a lot of really good moments. And so you don't always have to stay on the offense and wait for another shoe to drop. But there's a lot of good moments, and name them, you know, like I started celebrating the little things. And even in relationships, like if somebody does something and I just felt really loved, like even if it's small, comment on it, tell them what helps, tell them what feels good. And I think this is all part of taking preventative measures, right? Because not only are you able to get better at communicating what you're thinking and what you're feeling, but we teach others how to love us. And it's the same thing for other people. Like it's a small token of appreciation that they're experiencing when we do mention it, but it's also helping them learn how to love us better. And we'll find ourselves in less situations where they are hurting us and not intending to, because they also know that if they do this thing 100% of the time, I've told them, I love that. That feels good. That helps. That doesn't hurt me. Let me know in the comments what is challenging you, what is provoking you, what you're feeling conflicted by, what you're confused by. I want to know. I want to hear. I want to come alongside you. Let's plan to talk soon.